And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Look at this distinguished gentleman. Look at the way he is sitting. Yes, very distinguished.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network, a fine network. Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded one, Matasha Hotboy, Trey Kirby.
Ayo.
Ayo. And last but not least, over yonder, making the magic happen, super producer J.D.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team. Hit the like button, subscribe, tell a friend about the show, podcast listeners. 5-star ratings and reviews. We're going to jump right into last night's games because we got some beach stepping to do a little bit later, answering a few of your questions. But we begin with a crazy game between the Lakers and the Bucks. LA coming back from 19 down with no LeBron to pull out this game in double overtime. It felt like one of those ones that neither team really wanted to win for stretches. But AD, AR, other guys contributing.
AR, baby.
Get the Lakers the win. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I thought that the Lakers were going to pull the plug at some point. Where to start in this thing? Because the Bucks were killing them in each and every way from the beginning. It took the Lakers like 9 game minutes to get to double digits. That's hard to do. They only scored 42 in the first half, the lowest first half of their season. They were down double digits going into the fourth, double digits midway through the fourth. I thought that was it. I thought at that point, that's when Darvin Ham and Anthony Davis might say, hey, we got a back-to-back tomorrow. We're the 9th seed in the Western Conference. Maybe we'll save your legs. But Anthony Davis was awesome.
Yeah.
Those last 6 minutes.
He's a monster.
Kudos to that guy. 52 minutes he played in this game.
That's chunky.
Hey, let's round up. 53 minutes.
Oh,
he played
wow.
52 minutes and 51 seconds.
I didn't notice
Come on, AP. Round that bad boy up.
That's the most since Kobe played for the Lakers
yeah.
in 2012. That's the most minutes a Laker has played. And he played hard. I mean, the reputation that Anthony Davis always has, he's healthy, he's never healthy, he's hurt. I mean, that is going away this year. Like, this is a game, again, you could just say, all right, we're done here. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the fourth, when he was hobbling around a bit at times, he went and went knee to knee. He hit 2 threes at the end of this fourth quarter, looking like 2020 finals. he was awesome. He had a toilet bowl three, he had a ball that bounced 3 times and hit the rim. But you said AR. That guy was freaking important down the stretch there.
Yep.
He hit 7 points in the last few minutes of the fourth quarter, including that 33-foot. I don't know if you got to round up on that one. But 33-foot three-pointer. Speaking of threes, I always thought that this guy was going to be the number three guy coming into the season. He hasn't been that, but if they're going to win, he has to be exactly what he was. Almost hit the game winner to end that fourth quarter there. That one didn't go down, but all the guys around them got them to where they needed. D'Lo looked like the playoff D'Lo. 4 threes in that third quarter, what he did last year against Memphis. Spencer Dinwiddie, first basket in overtime. I mean, he was just sort of a role player. Like, those three guys, I mentioned those three guys.
Rui, too, had a big bucket where he drove baseline, did a little Euro. That was a big one, yeah.
Yeah, just support guys for Anthony Davis because Rui's most rebounds of his career, those other three guys, those were three starters in AR, D'Angelo Russell. I call him AR now. D'Angelo Russell and Spencer Dinwiddie, they all had a block in this game. That's kind of surprising for those three guys. They fought. What a wild one.
That's why the Lakers brought in Spencer Dinwiddie, man. Defense and clutch against Dame Lillard.
That's true.
He blocked his jumper in the previous Lakers win.
Yeah.
Made one basket, but what is quite an important one in this one.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, because this will get overlooked, because I know we're going to talk a little bit more about AD and Reeves, but credit to Dinwiddie for pushing the ball against Milwaukee in the double overtime when everybody was looking visibly gassed. The Bucks scored twice in that double overtime. Like, it went 3 minutes without anybody being able to score. We were live on playback. There was very little scoring because these guys were tired. But Dame had that fast break, right, where he dunked it. And that one, I thought, whoa, AD has run out officially of anything in the tank because he was not hustling back. He was just too tired. But then Dinwiddie, right away, like they put pressure on Milwaukee as they were trying to sort of set up their defense. And that one ended in a Reeves layup. And again, it was all created because of Dinwiddie having just a little more juice. And then right after that, Giannis scored with a little left-hand layup. Dinwiddie got the ball in immediately, pushed it in transition, saw that he had Dame, attacked him, got to the free throw line. So just heads up, and I think he just had like a little bit more inside him as this game got into like the 50-minute mark. I thought those were big, big plays. But let's go to the stars here. I mean, Anthony Davis, TK. You know, we were debating, is he going to be a lock for the All-NBA team? Is he just going to miss out? It's looking likely that he's going to be on one of these squads because 34 points, 23 rebounds, that game-saving block in the first overtime against Damian Lillard, a monster game, and then Reeves with the triple-double. I don't know who impressed you more.
Yeah, this was a double big beef game between AD and Giannis. And I thought AD completely outplayed Giannis down the stretch of this one. I think Giannis only scored 6 points over the fourth quarter and both overtimes combined. AD was challenging basically every shot. Felt like he grabbed every rebound and then had the juice to block Dame at the rim to save the game, really. But man, Reeves was so impressive in this one. 24 points after the first half. Finished with 29, 14, and 10. He hit a bunch of big shots. And he's just got such great feel. Without LeBron there, they needed his playmaking. And it was like, when he would catch and he was open, he knows I'm shooting it. When he would catch and somebody's closing out, I'm attacking to the hoop, finding open guys. He's a big game player. He raises his game when the Lakers need him to, and they needed it last night. And you mentioned Russell in the third quarter. He's the only reason that the Lakers even had a chance in this one. He's the only guy that kept them attached throughout the first three quarters, enough so that when the Bucks kind of relapsed into the Adrian Griffin mode, they were ready to go. The Lakers were, because, I don't know, this was the bad Bucks to me in that fourth quarter. Yeah. It was like Giannis was trying to carry. He was doing what he could. Dame didn't have a very big impact. I thought in this game he finished, what, 9 for 29 or something like that. Hit some big shots, missed some big shots, but a lot of messed up switches, a lot of miscommunications, a lot of hands in the air, shrugs looking at each other. What are we running here? This was one of the most disorganized Bucks clutch time games I thought I've seen in the Doc Rivers era, but who knows what's going to happen in overtime. That's why you got to win it in regulation.
Yeah, overall, the Austin Reeves factor was huge. As you said, it was a 33-footer. I got to double-check. Yeah, 33-footer to tie that game. To put him within two. And then he had the opportunity to try and win the game. A 34-footer that many Lakers fans were saying, come on, that's a long shot. That's way too long. We can't do anything else before the buzzer at the end of the fourth quarter there. I thought it was a totally fine shot. Yeah. Austin Reeves
thought it was going in, too. Yeah. You could tell by his reaction. Because he's wide open.
Yeah, he went glass off that one. And he was just awesome. I mean, I think these instances where Darvin Ham is pushing their guys to try and win extremely late to win, if they're not winning, if they're down, all four quarters to keep pushing them, it's a good sign for the postseason that this team has that ability. And a lot of kudos to Austin Reeves for being that supportive guy. And the guy you can see in the playoffs, you know, last year where he's like, I am him, I'm him, or whatever he said, against Memphis, and D'Angelo Russell doing his thing with those four threes. You can see in the playoffs, LeBron's just going to feed these guys. We need you, man. We need you. And so those guys, if they believe in themselves, they are 8 games above 500. I know it's something I forget. This team is decent.
Yeah, it's because they're in the play-in spot.
It's because they're freaking matchup. Low. Yeah. Yeah. They are down there. But when things are going extremely well, they fight. And in this one, they did.
There's been a lot of talk about the Lakers' free throws over the last couple days and the free throw differential sort of appeared in this game as well. Not as glaring as that Pacers one, but they went 30 for 32 at the free throw line. And in regulation and in overtime, it was lots of guys stepping to the line and like hitting big free throws like Dinwiddie or Prince and Reeves, and like, I mean, pretty impressive, because then you see on the other side, you had Giannis specifically having a bad Giannis game at the line, 1 for 6, and he missed 2, I guess, in the double overtime. You know, they were already at a pretty glaring deficit. I don't think they were going to come back, but he needed those 2 free throws, and he clanked both of them after taking 11 or 12 seconds to shoot them. So not a good Giannis game at the free throw line.
No.
And not a great, you're right, TK, this was a very bad Bucks fourth quarter. You know, Middleton went ice cold. Too many possessions where Giannis isn't even involved in anything. And Chris Middleton was getting shots that you've seen him hit a million times, but he just couldn't knock him down. He finished 4-15, and you're right about Dame, 9-29.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah. So Lakers get it done. Anything else from this one? Yeah, it was like, you know, it's called a thriller because it's double overtime. Reeves hit the big shot. But it wasn't, you know, it's one of those weird thrillers because it wasn't, it was a lot of stretches where they were just dragging and nobody could do anything.
Yeah, you could hear.
I was entertained, but I wouldn't call it a thriller is my point.
Yeah, it was weird because it was all guard play late.
Yeah.
That's all it was really in the overtimes. They're just going and three-point line. A lot of it you could hear. You could hear Reggie Miller saying it.
Yeah.
It's all guards here, but Anthony Davis needs the ball. And then all of a sudden, rev up the AR. He just hit a shot. Oh, yeah, I guess they don't need Anthony Davis. I mean, that was weird. That was just a weird overtime game for both teams. To see the Bucks, who play awesome one game and don't for, like, it was just a half quarter there where they really fell apart in mm-hmm. the end of the fourth quarter.
Let's go to the other team in the play-in spot in the Western Conference. The Rockets on their heels, and the Warriors got a much-needed win in Miami. Klay Thompson returning to the starting lineup.
Yep.
Scored 28 points. He balled out 11-20 from the floor, 6-14 on threes. But his highest scoring game since like mid-February as the Warriors beat the Heat. 113-92. What were your takeaways? Yeah, shout out to our guy Stefan, who loves to say that. What do you think of Klay and the Warriors and getting this win on the road here?
We were just talking recently about how the Warriors need a number two because they got Steph and he can do a lot. But he can't always do everything all by himself. They had four number twos, I thought, last night. Shout out to four morning poops. I hope you're listening as well. But Curry was kind of good. Not great, I thought. 17 points on 7 of 15 three-point shooting. Only 3 of 10 from the line, but he had 6 assists. And I thought he did a good job of getting off the ball really quick and allowing the Warriors to play advantage basketball. So Draymond had 8 assists. 2 of them were for dunks from Jonathan Kuminga. He finished with 18, had 3 dunks. Wiggins went off, 17 points. I thought he was pretty aggressive in this one. And then, like you mentioned, Klay, 28 points and 6 threes. The Warriors actually got contributions from their others in this game. They didn't need a huge game from Curry. And then the defense, it was actually awesome in the second half. They only allowed 37 to Miami. They forced 4 turnovers, only 29% field goal shooting from the Heat in the second half. The Warriors were in zone, but more importantly, like, they just got back on defense. They didn't give up anything easy to the Heat on a night where Jimmy Butler was like a late scratch. Yeah. They didn't have shooters out there, so you would think they're going to want to push the pace to try and get some easy buckets. They just couldn't get it going at all against the Golden State Warriors, who needed this win, like absolutely needed the win, because wouldn't have been good if they dropped to 11th with the Rockets. They were a half game behind heading into last night, so they needed this one, and they looked like they needed this one.
Yeah, they saw no Jimmy, no Hero, no Duncan Robinson. They said, we need to shoot threes. We're not going to beat them in the two-point category, and they're going to get physical with us. And so Klay entered the starting lineup for the first time, you know, with Steph and Wiggins and Kuminga and Dre for a long time. He has been on the bench for basically over a month, most of it, and he fills in for injuries. But with that five starting lineup, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, it happens on the floor a little bit, but when it does, they're outscoring opponents by 55 in the 157 minutes together. So that's something that Steve Kerr can definitely look at, and he has been pretty good since he went to the bench. 18.5 points on really good percentages, 42 from three. He's made 76 threes. That's the most in the NBA over the last month or so, even more than Steph Curry by a lot. Anthony Slater pointing that out. So that lineup, it's pretty damn good, and that's the one that put it away midway through the fourth, where they just went on that run with Kuminga getting lobs and the Wiggins getting a layup, and then Klay Thompson going at it. So it was those five, really. I mean, it was Klay helping out. Everybody wondered, Klay going to the bench for the first time since he was a freaking rook. Will he be able to do it? I mean, he has picked it up. Got frustrated, didn't like it, said it, but he has really played extremely hard, and that lineup. That's their lineup. I think we're going to see it probably close a lot with Wiggins, Kuminga, and Dre, along with the Splash Bros.
Haywood Highsmith had a good first half for the Heat, but this game felt like it was 5-on-1. It was Bam versus the Warriors in this game for a good chunk of it. And he fought for a majority of the game, but it was a little too much. The Warriors are now 19-15 on the road. They're 18-19 at home, and I saw that they're on pace to be the second team in NBA history to finish with a winning record overall, while having a sub-500 home record. Little strange. I feel like the Heat are also horrible at home. I know they have been recently. So just odd, these teams play a little bit better, it feels like, when they're on the road. But yeah, you said it, the Warriors moving a full game now ahead of Houston in the race for 10th. They have the tiebreaker, so that's in their advantage as well. And the Heat remain in 7th in the Eastern Conference. They're tied with Philly. They have the head-to-head tiebreaker, but it's obviously very, very close there. So bad loss for them, but, you know, no Jimmy really hurt. Mm-hmm. And you saw the Warriors, like, and you're seeing it from a lot of teams against the Heat. It's like, go zone. Go zone against shoot. Them. They're not great shooters. Like, make them try and beat you, especially if there's no Duncan Robinson out there. And, of course, no Tyler Hero, who's missed a good chunk of time now.
Yeah.
So smart tactic from some of these other teams. Let's see if they can shoot at all, and they haven't really been able to.
No. 5 straight losses versus Western Conference teams all under 100 points. Yeah. So they're clankers, for sure. they thought they could play a two-pointer game, and Kerr was smart to start. Ninja shoot from three-point line, and they were moving the ball extremely well. How do we feel about Draymond Green's foul call that wasn't a flagrant foul call? Yeah, bit of a horse collar, but it was close.
It was called just a common foul.
Yeah,
we were talking about early in the game, Draymond doing Draymond things, you know, sort of fighting with Patty Mills in the paint there, and yeah, then sort of wrapped him up top, sort of almost looks like a little choke job. Patty stretches back and called a foul. Draymond was pissed about the foul even being called, and then they looked at it and said, okay, it's not a flagrant. It's that, the epitome of Draymond Green right there. It's just way too extra. There's no reason. I was trying to say on playback, he does this thing where it's like, he's like a violent flailer. So it's like,
yeah, he's Stephen Adams.
Yeah, he's embellishes everything. He's looking for calls. He's trying to be demonstrative with his arms and legs and whatever. Yeah.
Nurkic's
and he hurts people doing
this.
Yeah, yeah. Patty wasn't hurt on the play. Like, he sort of bounced right back up. It didn't look good in the replay for sure, but in the end, nothing came of it.
Yeah, so they're kind of near the key and Patty Mills grabbed Draymond Green's arm because he's being smart. This is crafty. You can't go stop our guy. I mean, basically is what it was. He knew what was happening. And then Draymond responded with a little hug to the neck. So he could have called it a flagrant.
Hug to the neck.
Yeah.
Is that a new term for sort of a choke?
Well, sort of a choke.
It's like when Ben Simmons got into a fight with, who was it, Karl Anthony Towns, and he was a peacemaker with his arms.
Yeah.
Okay. Could have been a 15-yard penalty, though, I agree. Yeah. Maybe a horse collar, but
that's
true. We like physicality in basketball. Yeah. I have no problem with that one.
Okay, there you go. So the Warriors get it done. Let's move on to the Thunder rallying to top the Pelicans 119-112 after they lost a 20-point lead. This is a double rally game. You know, the Pelicans coming back huge, and then they take the lead, and then the Thunder close it out in the fourth quarter there. They had a 12-0 run there over like 2.5 minutes to escape with this 119-112 victory. Your takeaways?
I mean, shout out to Four Morning Poops. This was a game of runs.
Oh, boy, wow.
I think that's the shortest 20-point lead that's ever existed in the NBA. The Thunder got up by 20 with 6 minutes and 48 seconds left. CJ McCollum hit a 3 14 seconds later, and it was a 2-point lead 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
That was it just like went like that.
Yeah.
And then, like you mentioned, the Pelicans didn't score the last 3:11 of this game, despite leading 112 to 107. They ended up losing 119 to 112. OKC, that 12-0 run. It was some defense. Like, I thought Chet was pretty big time at the rim. Shea had a nice steal.
Yep.
But it was kind of just the Pelicans were blowing it. They got a lot of open looks. CJ McCollum went 0 for 4.
Yep.
More concerning, though, Zion couldn't get it going at all in the fourth quarter. I don't even touch the ball the last 5 minutes.
I think he touched it like once or maybe twice.
Part of it's the Pelicans. Yep. Or part of it's, I mean, the Thunder, like, packing the paint because there's not a lot of shooting out there. They don't have to worry about a second guy in Brandon Ingram. And CJ was kind of cold.
Yep.
So they can definitely build a wall, make it tough for Zion, but they just weren't going through him at all, and CJ was taking every open shot he could take. Fair enough. You got to make one of them. If he makes one of them, maybe things look a little bit different.
Yeah, I think a big part of it, too, was Lu Dort guarding Zion Williamson for the first time all game in those last few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Dagnon said, you go over there. He's monstrous and is a decent matchup, and so there was that only point of the game for me where Zion stopped being the playmaker. Yeah, he only touched it a couple times, and he had 10 assists in this game. He was awesome at that. But I think the Lu Dort finishing this game on him was key. And the OKC team, they can win in so many games. And I always wonder who is going to finish games with Shea, Chet Holmgren most likely, and J-Dub, and Jalen Williams. It's those three guys. And yeah. Lu Dort was out there, and he closed the game, and he was perfect. Zion didn't score the last 6 minutes of this game. And then Lu Dort stepped into a three. Surprised me. I didn't think Lu Dort could do that coming to the season. This is his best three-point shooting season, but with a minute left, it was a nice pass from Giddey, who also closed with Lu Dort, and he was damn good in this game for OKC. He loves playing in New Orleans. It was the play-in game last year. He was awesome. He had 31 in that game. He just comes in, and they let him go. They said, hey, you go shoot the ball, and he did it freaking well. He had five threes in this game.
Career high, five threes.
Yeah, and most in the game, period, of over anybody. So he had the first 8 points for OKC, 25 overall. So they could just finish games with whoever. I mean, they got a lot of guys, whether it's Aaron Wiggins, throw him in, or Isaiah Joe, or easily a Gordon Hayward at times.
I don't know about Gordon Hayward.
No, man. It's not looking good.
He's been pretty bad since he got to the Thunder, but Cason Wallace is good as well.
Cason Wallace, yeah, they got guys.
But sure. You're right. If Dort is obviously hitting the three ball, if Giddey's having a game like this where he's not a liability, you can leave him because he's knocking down the three, then you have five scorers. You've got SGA, who also hit a big three to get the Thunder back in this game. You obviously have J-Dub, who just takes over fourth quarters, as he did in this game too. Had that one where he drove to the net, hit some big free throws, and then Chet. I mean, that's five guys that are, a lot of them, really good defensively, that are also scoring threats. Because, yeah, I went through those final six shots that the Pelicans missed, and it was like the one time after a timeout, Zion had the ball, Dort was on him. There was a lot of off-ball screening, which was nice, but otherwise Zion was just standing there with the ball, and that one ended with a pass to Herb Jones, who just fired up a three and missed. But Chet prevented a McCollum layup, you're right, TK, and SGA did have two, I thought, where McCollum ISO'd on him, and SGA just like didn't bite on anything. It took him into a tough shot, and he missed. And then that other one where he stripped... was it McCollum again? Somebody else was driving in.
Herb, and, maybe?
Yeah, I believe it was Herb Jones, and SGA with the quick hand. So, like... not enough Zion, awesome defense from these guys, and that got him this victory, but yeah, good game. It was, at least the Pelicans made it interesting, because this one on playback, we were like, okay, they're up 20, there's not a lot of time left, this is over, and then, suddenly someone else in the chat's going, you better go back there and check this out, because they've suddenly got this down to a two-point game in a hurry. Any other thoughts?
New Orleans has some questions to answer, I think, at center. You've mentioned it before, Tass, but Jonas Valanciunas played the whole first half of this game, and... the Pelicans got shredded in pick and roll. Like, they can't guard when Valanciunas is out there, so Larry Nance plays the whole second half at center, and they can't rebound. They gave up six offensive rebounds, and a lot of them came in the fourth quarter. A lot of them came down the stretch as well. So this is a team that's just, despite their depth, they're still a little unformed, and that's probably something for David Griffin to look at in the summer. I think Valanciunas is going to be a free agent, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yep. Yeah, so I don't know. You would like somebody who could... do both. I mean, who wouldn't, You'd love a Chet Holmgren on this team, but they should find somebody who's a little bit more balanced, I think.
Yeah, and Willie Green likes starting them both in different halves. This always happens. Valanciunas, you start the first half, but you're not starting the second half because it's not looking as good. They obviously missed Brandon Ingram just to be the guy there.
Oh, yeah.
To be the outlet in the fourth quarter. CJ McCollum had that. He had a cold night, and... it did come down to the wire, and it was just great to see Shea, go one-on-one. And it was like, what are you going to do with that guy? They tried building a wall at first, but then they weren't getting out to the shooters fast enough. And then he had two, really smooth offensive rebounds. This guy does everything smooth, and even an offensive rebound is in the smooth category to me.
Because, smooth offensive rebound.
Because he didn't just corral it. He knew he could just tip it to a guy, and that gave him a good opportunity on the offensive end. Happened twice.
Oh, there was that one.
He's awesome, man.
That he purposely tipped to. Was it to Chet?
I think it was Chet.
Yeah, that was sick. I know which one you're talking about. Giannis also had a beautiful tip last night out to a three-point shooter, like a purposeful tip.
Yeah.
Nice. Smooth. Smooth offensive rebound. That's true sickle shit right there.
Yeah. The volley block. I don't know why I say volley. But the volley block by Chet Holmgren, also awesome. He just goes two hands, man. I got this thing. Classic Chet. Love it.
Final game last night. There was only four on. Don't worry, there's 12 on tonight. But Luka scored 28. Mavericks killed the Kings. 132-96. Dallas moves into sixth place in the Western Conference. They're a game ahead of the Sacramento Kings, though they play again here later in the week. Kings just got to split one, get one of those two to take the tiebreaker. But the Mavs used a 22-4 run in the third quarter to put the game to bed. Fox called it one of Sacramento's worst halves of the season. Probably true. But yeah, the Mavs are rolling right now. I think they're 9-1 in their last 10 games. Luka doing Luka things. The guys they picked up at the deadline are contributing. Tim Hardaway Jr. was hitting threes last night. You know, we have Luka pranking Derek Jones Jr. mid-game as he's checking off, doing the old dad move. Like, oh, you got a little something. Whoop, boop.
Gotcha,
got
sucker.
Him looking down. Ah, Mark Cuban's dying in the background. This guy's hilarious. But they're having fun is the point. And, you know, why wouldn't they be when they're kicking the snot out of Sacramento here?
Luka had 2 points and one assist in the second half of this game, and Dallas shot 63% and made 12 threes. This was honestly a tale of two halves for both Luka and for Kyrie. It's like Luka dominated the first half, what, 26, I guess, of his 28 in the first half, and Kyrie scored 18 of his 24 in the second half. And it seemed to me that the Mavericks basically beat the Kings at their own game. They looked faster. They looked obviously like a better offense. It seems like a... the Sacramento Kings of last year, where they're just going to run you off the floor, they're gone at this point. They got to figure out different ways to win. But I thought that was huge for Dallas. Both of these teams on the second night of a back-to-back. Dallas on the road gives them a one-game lead for sixth, and it's their first win against Sacramento this season. Yeah. So if they win this next one, it's all even up in the season series. But great stuff from Dallas. They held Sacramento to 32% in the second half, and the Luka and Kyrie dominated the defenders on the Kings. 7 of 10 against Keon Ellis and 11 of 17 against Keegan Murray. Those guys did not have a chance.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for Sacramento to find a defender for Luka. There's Harrison Barnes on him at times, and Luka said, oh, my former teammate, I remember you, and he crushed him. The doubling that they did for Luka, it did look like they were on a back-to-back a little bit. They were slow. Sacramento was a little slow out there to defend. But the three-point shooting... that was the best three-point shooting game since they made those trades at the deadline for PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. This was the team that they hoped for. With Luka and Kyrie being the guys, they are the offense. They are the fulcrum. Just give it to them. And you're right in that Kyrie had a quiet first half and then started like a machine in the third quarter. Yeah, and it was this different thing for Luka. It's exactly what happened. Kyrie dunking again. This is the most dunks he's had in his career in one season.
Wow.
It's five. That's not a lot, but it's a lot for Kyrie.
Yeah, sure.
Two of them are like in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah,
yeah. He's getting better right now.
Yeah, I saw the Kings Herald blog described Sacramento's loss as a death by a thousand daggers, because when Luka and Kyrie weren't hitting, you know, tough contested shots, it was just Tim Hardaway Jr. wide open, or PJ Washington wide open, Dante Exum, I think you could even throw in there, wide open, and they just hit threes all night. Mavs made 22 of 39 threes, season best 56.4%. Beyond the arc. That'll do it. And that'll get you to the point where teammates can prank each other on the sidelines.
It's prank season.
It was good to see. I hadn't seen that move in a long time. You got something on there and you look down, a little boop, you know. Maybe you guys do it a lot more often with the kids. I don't know. That's a classic.
No, I haven't, but I'm going to start doing it.
Yeah,
that's very funny.
I'm Mark Cuban in that instance. I would laugh every time. Like, oh, you got caught.
You sucker.
For sure. By the way, Sabonis did get his double-double. 12 points, 11 boards, 9 assists. Nearly triple-double, but his 55th. Straight double-double, I think, tied the Kings franchise record with Jerry Lucas way back in the day.
All right.
So one more and he'll have that. Let's throw up the Western Conference standings before we take a break. Just to remind everyone where we stand here. This changes daily, so you got to stay on top of it. Nuggets still in the one spot, half a game over OKC. Then it's Minnesota, Clippers in fourth, Pelicans fifth there. And you've got Dallas right behind them. I mean, Dallas could get up to as high as fourth here by the time we actually get to the postseason, which is a little weird to say because they were sort of hanging around a little further back. And then it's Kings 7th, Suns 8th, Lakers 9th, Warriors 10th, and the Rockets still a game back. Fun stuff!
Yeah, and you're right. Dallas could really make a run. They've won 9 of their last 10. The only one they lost, Luka didn't play in, and they've got like a cake schedule for the rest of the season. They got the Kings coming up next, then Rockets, Warriors, Hawks, Warriors, Rockets, Hornets, Heat, Pistons, Thunder.
Oh, that's fairly easy.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Yeah.
Their toughest game is the last game of the season, which may not matter.
May not matter. Mm. So it's weird. We were like, for weeks, we were like, okay, it's Clippers-Pelicans. It's looking like that'll be the 4-5 because the top three are decided, and then... 6 through 11 are sort of jockeying for position, but Yeah, Dallas could get up there. A couple of these teams could get up there and ruin our first round Clippers Pelicans series.
Oh man!
Mm-hmm. But you know, obviously they would like that. All of these teams would love home court advantage here.
And Kyrie and Luka have learned to play together. Obviously, this is their first full season together. They only had a couple of months at the end of last season. They do look like they can just take turns. That's what their offense.
Are you
looks
saying
like
there's
for sure.
two Batmans?
Two Batmans?
Yeah. Did you see this whole thing after no. the game? They're asking Luka about. The idea of who's Batman, who's Robin. And Luka's saying, no, no, Kyrie's Batman.
Nice.
I'm Robin. But I think there are two more Batmans than anything. I don't think anyone's a Robin here.
No, they're just glad that they traded the other Batman. Grant Williams. Literally. He loved
being a
Batman.
They used to have two Batmans. That was the problem, maybe.
Yeah. One Batman, too many. Yeah. Does Batman have a multiverse? JD, do you know? Probably he does, right?
He would think so, but...
Great question.
Oh, yeah. The whole last Flash movie was all multiverse.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Because Keaton shows up. And,
so is there like a pig version of Batman?
Well, they didn't go that far.
Oh, okay.
They didn't, they didn't have the guts.
All right. Well, let's take a break. And real quick break. And when we come back, we'll hit the beach, answer a few of your questions. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, yeah, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
All right, back in the Classic Factory. Lots of you joining us live, which we love to see. But the math ain't mathin'. Way too many people live, not enough people hitting the like button. So just take a second, click that little thumbs up, and then we'll be good to go. Because it's time to hit the beach.
You got the buzz, I got the rockets. You got the nuts, I got the chocolates. We got that chit-chat down pat, blah, blah, blah. You got that certain special, je ne sais quoi. Let's go!
Are on the beach because it's the only place to read your emails and your tweets, and we got some good ones thanks to everybody always sending in their questions. First one from Ronnie. Hey boys, just heard that Jimmer Fredette was picked by USA Basketball for the men's first 3-on-3 hoops team to appear in the Olympics. Jimmer, who's 35, will play for the US in Paris this summer alongside Canyon Berry, Kareem Maddox, and Dylan Travis. Happy for these guys, and they'll likely do well, but come on. Let's send the world's best. Which four NBA players would you pick to represent the men's U.S. Olympic 3-on-3 team? This is hilariously timed. I just saw Ziller in his newsletter this morning write, "Why is USA basketball sending four non-NBA 30-somethings to the Olympics?" It is a little weird. Like, you think the idea, it's like a lost opportunity to maybe elevate the three-on-three sport by the men's team not sending, you know, NBA guys or recently retired NBA guys. I don't know. It is a little strange because the WNBA, they sent their best. Like, they had a really good squad in the last Olympics that they qualified for. It was Alicia Gray, Jackie Young, Kelsey Plum, and Stephanie Dolson. I don't know if you have a take on that, or do you care at all, or it's like, why not let these guys who have obviously gone through the grind to get there, let them go try and get a gold medal?
I'm more on that side of things because, I mean, it's tough to get the best NBA players to go to the World Cup, let alone go to the second basketball tournament in the Olympics.
Sure.
So I don't really think it's the NBA's responsibility to blow up the three-on-three game worldwide.
Okay.
Do other countries send their best players to play in the three-on-three? Probably not, because, I mean, like, Luka's not going to play five-on-five and then three-on-three.
Yeah. So, well, wow. I mean,
the depth of talent isn't quite the same.
But I do love the idea. We do that for all these other sports. It's like, Michael Phelps is in this race, and then he's in this race, and then he's in this team race. We see that with track athletes, like a gymnast. It'd be funny if Luka was like, all right, I'm going to go try and win gold in both.
Whoever wins the big three should be the team.
Okay, sure.
They still have that?
I don't know.
Yeah, it exists.
Yeah. Who won?
There's another tournament.
It's like Joe Johnson. He goes every year. 8-time gold medalist Joe Johnson.
Send Joe Johnson. Okay, so this.
I like
this
seeing
is the
Canyon Barry. He shoots free throws underhanded, granny style.
Just like Gramps.
Yeah, just like Rick. I like it. He's good at it.
That Jimmer, Canyon Barry, Maddox, and Dylan Travis. They're going to be going for it here. But let's have some fun with the question. It's a fun experiment, thought experiment. Who would you pick? Which four NBA players, if you were trying to build a three-on-three team, would you send? TK, you're the American here. Who are you sending?
I'm indeed an American. I didn't really know where to go here because I wasn't picking, like, the biggest stars in the world, like LeBron, Steph, KD, and Alex Caruso. It's a decent three-on-three team,
sure.
I do believe. But I tried to go away from the stars. So here's four who I think would do well that haven't been all-stars. I want people that can play both sides of a two-man game.
Yep.
Can do catch-and-shoots when the other guys are doing stuff and are not a total zero on defense. So one of my first ads is Derek White.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Run the pick and roll, be the roll man, hit catch and shoot threes, defend everybody. Yep. You're on the team.
Okay.
Aaron Gordon, you're making the team.
Oh, nice.
You're the big man version of Derek White. Basically, you dunk, Derek White shoots threes. What's the difference?
Okay.
Then I'm going a little bit more specialist-based here. Give me Desmond Bane.
Wow. All right.
We forget about Desmond Bane because the Grizzlies have not been very good this season. He missed a huge chunk of time, but he's a really good player. Maybe he gives up a little on the defensive end, but I'm also, this might be cheating, Chet Holmgren, can I have him on my team?
Yeah, for sure.
That guy's going to be a future all-star, but he's not yet. And he's not going to make Team USA's men's national team 5-on-5 this year, so he can play 3x3 because I think he does everything that would be perfect for a 3-on-3 big.
I'm
threes,
sure.
Dunks.
Yeah.
Defense.
I'm showing my ignorance here to the 3-on-3 game, at least what they play in the Olympics. Do they do the nonstop 3-on-3 action? Yeah, where it's not like, it's not make it take it by any means, but it's not even like we stop and set up. It's a quick game is my point.
Right.
It's very, very fast. Like I'm talking, you score, then the team that just got scored on takes the ball and clears it, and it's just like continuous play. We tried it for the first time a couple months ago, TK. I had never played that version of 3-on-3. It's extremely tiring.
That's awesome.
It's nonstop. Like, you score, and you're like, yay, we scored. And you're like, shit, my guy's wide open at the three-point line.
That's a key. You got to pick people that don't celebrate made baskets.
You can't.
You could never have D'Angelo Russell in this game.
Yeah, you got to be ready to get back out there on defense. But a good team that he put together. Any other guys that you'd like to see get a chance at this?
No, I mean, I went to the mentality, just take your best players in the world.
Sure.
Yeah, well, the 23 guys that they have, or I'm sorry, it's 28 guys that they have in that group for the U.S. national team.
Mm, like the select team almost, whatever they call it, yeah.
I mean, there's lots. So I think it would be way easier to pick the 3x3 team. But I do think you got to pick fast guys, that's for sure.
Yes.
So I think Steph would be a smart guy because he just likes running.
Duh, yeah.
So that would be my number one. And then, the the wing, I think you kind of want a 7-footer. I think I'd still take Kevin Durant out there. This is hard, man. Right. This is so hard. How about like the guys who've been MVP recently, like all those guys? I think you could get
They're
Embiid.
They're not American.
Yeah.
Yeah, Embiid can be an American, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I'm okay. I got three. And then you would take a fourth because that's the rules. You have four guys on your team. This one's tough, man. I couldn't think. You know, there's guys out there. I think probably AD will come out there.
Well, you're taking a big-ass team.
Yeah, it's big.
I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work in this high-speed 3-on-3.
Yeah. Curry's the one who's going to run. He's never going to touch the ball. Curry just runs around. And then you feed him.
Fair.
Okay. Feed him.
I want chemistry, so give me the Villanova Knicks and Mikal Bridges. They'd be small.
Not bad.
They'd be a little small, but, man, they'd be fun as hell to be the representative for Team USA. Just send those guys. We're talking Brunson, Hart, DiVincenzo, and then we're adding Mikal Bridges. It's a little test run to see if it will work for the Knicks. Fun question there from Ronnie. Next one here.
My dudes, your talk recently of it being a great night for Jaylens around the league got me thinking. Which first name can assemble the best NBA five? Okay, so the best first name in NBA history here. Positionless if it tickles your pickle. Oh, interesting, interesting. Who you got? 10 bags of ice, cold plunge, no shaft. That from Miles in Portsmouth, UK.
Okay, so
best name in NBA history, or current, I guess, well, depending which way you want to go. Just first names, you've got a starting five, they all got the same name.
Let me go current, because it's worth pointing out, you can build a hell of a team of Jaylens. Like, it's a really decent team. Jaylen Brunson as your point guard. Jalen Green as your shooting guard. Jalen Williams, the J-Dub one, as your three. Jalen Big Johnson at the four. And then let's just go pure big man, Jalen Duren, as your five. That's a hell of a starting five. Then you got Jalen Suggs coming off the bench as your defensive-minded guy. You got Jalen McDaniels. Okay, not the best of the McDaniels, but still, he's an NBA player. Yeah, Jalen Smith, decent backup big. And we got a couple young guys, rookies. Nets rookie Jalen Wilson, throw him at the end of the bench. And Lakers rookie Jalen Hood-Schifino, who's injured right now. I think he's got a back injury, but that's a good, what'd I give you? 10 Jaylens.
That's a lot of Jaylens.
Wow.
That's pretty damn good.
That's got to be the most common name in the league.
Maybe we should send a team of Jaylens to the represent.
3x3, yeah.
The 3-on-3, 3x3 there in the Olympics. But did you tackle this like NBA history? Do you have another name?
I only went current players.
Okay, what'd you got?
The only thing I think is comparable is Anthony.
Okay, you're going to... Okay, go ahead.
You got to
cheat a little bit, yeah.
Anthony Edwards, Anthony Davis, Anthony Black. All right. You got Edwards and Davis. You're looking good.
That's good.
But then you got to get Carl Anthony Towns and Cole Anthony.
That's fine. That's fine. We got to allow that.
Yeah,
we got to
get some
name,
Tonys
but...
in here. Sorry, Tony Snell, Tony Roten out of the league.
Tony Brothers calling the game.
Yeah, he'll be there.
Okay.
He's putting it all on TikTok.
You got anything else?
I went traditional. I went old school.
Okay.
I went all Bills who've played this game before, not current.
Okay.
So big Bill Russell, 11 titles. You know, he's starting. Bill Cunningham, another Bill Hall of Famer. Bill Sharman, 4 titles, and another Bill Hall of Famer. Bill Bradley, 2 titles, another Bill Hall of Famer. And then Bill Walton.
Holy crap.
Man. Another one.
It's a big team, but that's a lot of good Bills.
They're going to throw it down.
What happened to the name Bill?
Yeah, it's gone.
Oh, we haven't had a Bill Hall of Famer in almost 50 years.
Yeah.
Let's do an investigation.
Yeah, everybody's named Jalen now. There's no Bills. All right,
that's
good
crazy,
stuff.
Actually.
That's a fun question from Miles. Next one here. Dear No Dunky Bunch. Oh, I know who sent this in. When you read that to start the email, you know who sent it in. Trey had 2 Bulls on his almost improved teams, and Skeets was talking about how well the Villanova Knicks are doing. So it got me thinking, which NBA team has the most players having the best season of their career? I think my Celtics have 6. Derek White, both Jays, so Tatum and Brown, and then 3 white guys off the bench. Sam Hauser, Peyton Pritchard, Luke Kornet. Thanks for all the classics. That's from Cheeve in Massachusetts.
Deep
up,
cuts
Chief?
There. Deep cuts with Hauser, Pritchard, and Kornet.
He's
but he's not wrong.
Probably right, though,
yeah.
The best of their
totally.
Career.
Totally.
You know, so I think he does have a case for 5 or 6. Is there another team that can beat Chiefs Celtics in terms of the most, like, sort of best year of their career on one squad this year?
Cleveland is close, I think.
Okay.
Not Evan Mobley, not Darius Garland, but I would say almost everybody else is having their best season of their career. Donovan Mitchell, MVP candidate before he's been out of the lineup here. Dean Wade, more than just a joke these days. Jared Allen's making plays. Max Strus shoots threes. Okoro can knock him down now. Niang shooting 37% from three. Sam Merrill is a guy. He makes threes every game he plays, so I think
Caris LeVert, you've talked about before.
Caris LeVert, he's had some good seasons, the Pacers back in the day, but he's not having his worst season, I would say. So I would throw Cleveland in the mix.
Okay.
I think you can throw OKC in there as well.
Yeah.
I think this is Shea's best season.
Yeah, for
sure. J-Dub, obviously.
Yeah.
I mentioned Lou Dort earlier. The guy's shooting 40% from threes, a career 34.7% guy. He's turned that on for some reason. Aaron Wiggins, Isaiah Joe.
Where did you come from? Where did you go?
Yeah. Where did you go, Isaiah Joe? you went from – Philly fans should be saying that. Where did you go? They would like to have
He's
him.
Having a pretty similar year to last year, Isaiah Joe, because I was also looking at OKC. But I thought – I don't know. I think we come up just short to maybe Cleveland and to maybe Boston.
His defense got better with Mr. Joe, got better. But they also traded a bunch of guys in Poku, Bertans, Mann, who is having his best season somewhere else. Micic, who is having his best season somewhere else. Homer is having his best season.
He's playing.
He didn't play last year.
Oh, Jesus. What about Orlando? Could Orlando make a case here? You know, Paolo, obviously.
Franz, no.
Yeah. Mm.
That one hurts.
But maybe Mo.
Mo, definitely. Yeah. He was on my almost improved third team. Cole Anthony, I think, is having his best season.
Yeah, I think they got some guys. They got some guys. Fun question, Chief. Good stuff. Way to go for your Celtics. Sorry about the loss the other night. Next one here, Tessie.
Next one. Hey, gang, we've all joked about the Heat culture jerseys in court, but this got me thinking about other basketball cultures. Sure, teams with history and legacy like the Lakers, Spurs, and Knicks have an established culture. But which team is most likely to be the next in establishing a culture? Interesting. My pick would be the Thunder. OKC is poised for sustained success over the next few years. The team invests heavily in the draft, as opposed to free agency, and the fans are among the most engaged. Thanks, I'll hang up and take my answer off air. Gordon.
Good Gord. Good question, good Gord. OKC is a great pick. I mean, like you just laid out the case. I'll go back to Orlando. Orlando Magic at least have an identity they're building there under Mosley, and that is defense, baby. And then you've got an all-star, a future, potential MVP-like guy in Paolo looking a couple years down the line. They just know what they do defensively, though. They force a bunch of turnovers. They take care of the glass on the defensive end, so to end possessions. So, I mean, I'll make a small case for them that they have definitely done a pretty good job here of establishing sort of a culture.
I would say OKC number one, Orlando number two, because like Paolo cares on defense.
Yeah.
That you don't always see from a guy who is clearly the best player on the team. Franz gives a huge effort as well, and you see how much Jonathan Isaac means to them as a team, the way he comes in and plays 20 minutes of the best defense in the league, basically. So I think they're up there. Probably my third team would have to be the New York Knicks, the Tom Thibodeau Knicks. He's closing in on his longest tenure as a coach. And it doesn't feel like it's wearing thin. It feels like it's actually getting stronger, and they're bringing in more and more Tibbs guys. It was Josh Hart last year. He plays 48 minutes a game now. Then they got OG Anunoby. He played 48 minutes a game for a while till he got hurt. Now it's Deuce McBride playing 48 minutes a game as well. So they're just finding these guys who would have fit in perfectly with the Bulls in the early 2010s and who would have also fit in perfectly with the Knicks in the 1990s. So I think that's a culture team as well.
Yeah, we're going to get shocked one of these days. We're going to look at a Knicks box score and somehow six guys will have played all 48 minutes.
They're
gonna be like, how the hell did Tibbs pull that out? Jesus. Do you have any other teams?
I think the Timberwolves have taken on this new identity with Rudy Gobert being amazing. Karl Anthony Towns taking another step as a player, even though he's been around for a long time. You got multi-tool guys like your Kyle Anderson. You got veterans like Conley. So with Anthony Edwards there as being one of the best in the friggin' league, you got Finchie getting them going. And the other one, I think this one's more a little aspirational, but the Clippers want to change. I mean, they're freaking old, so it's going to be hard, but they're getting a new arena. They just hope that this team that they have right now is a different type of team that'll last forever, but that's probably not going to happen. and they're just too old. That's like when you look at all these guys. I mean, they should be a tough team in the playoffs. They should be a championship type of team. But anyways, they got a new arena. They're just trying to be a new team that fans scream for. So
hey,
TBD.
I'm into it, man.
Nice. Thanks for changing, because you didn't believe for a long time.
No, that was just an Intuit dome joke.
Oh, I didn't get it.
Because I don't believe at all.
They've lost their culture, it almost feels like. Their culture right now is calling each other out about not having an identity.
Yeah, they're soft.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a culture.
At least Westbrook's back. I know he just played in one game, right? He will get them going again. Final question. One more, why not, from Judd in Kenora. Yo, fellas, I'm sitting here watching the Mavs Spurs, a little high, a little drunk. Nice, Judd. And I saw Jared Dudley was an assistant coach for Dallas. Made me think about an all-assistant coach dumb. Made me think about an all-assistant coach team. Dumb? Maybe. But have fun with it. Definitely sent in from a guy a little high and a little drunk. But I like this one. Tass, I feel like you more than anyone brings up, you know, you slip it in when we're talking about games. You're like, oh, this assistant coach on this team and this assistant coach on this team. Because there's a lot of former NBA players that are sprinkled on all of these benches. Did you have some fun putting together an all-assistant coach team?
Yeah, I do watch the every single broadcast and see, whoa, that guy's an assistant coach. Whoa, that guy's an assistant coach. Yeah, like Leandro Barbosa, who would be my point guard. Especially because, number one, just surprised me. This man is an assistant coach with the Sacramento Kings, but also he's still sort of young. You know, I think that's important here when talking about assistant coaches. He can still be fast. Shooting guard would be Jason Terry, because also still sort of young and can just hit a billion shots. My small forward would be Caron Butler, all-star man doing his thing. Power forward would be Corliss Williamson, the big nasty. Number one, we need somebody who is nasty, who is tough. And, you know, he ran a Timberwolves film review recently to get guys motivated. I've got plans for my assistant coach team. I've got the guy who's running the film review would be this guy. Vin Baker, who would be the center for the Milwaukee Bucks, recently had a good conversation with my man Thanasis Adekunpo on Thanalysis, his podcast. It was about his battles with alcoholism, so that was great. My center, this is a dark horse, Epe Udo. He's another young guy. He's in his 30s, just recently finished his NBA career. Then he had played in a couple seasons in Japan. So this is more of a, hey, let's have a conversation about your time in Japan. Let's do a podcast. Why not?
Okay.
Take your time. We got time here. My sixth guy, I'm going deep, Jay Triano. You may say, what? This guy was a baller. He was on the Canadian national team.
That's true.
Some things people don't know about this guy. He helped win Canada a bronze in the 84 Olympics. They lost to Michael Jordan. Lost to Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullen. That was a great one. He was drafted in the eighth round of the NBA in the 81 draft by the Lakers. When it went to camp, just didn't make the team. Mm-hmm. He was also drafted in the sixth round by the Canadian Football League Calgary Stampeders because he was an athlete.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he just played basketball instead.
Wow.
He's a busy man.
Jeez.
Busy man, and he's going to be playing a lot.
Okay, so say that again. Hit me with your team there.
I know Trey's we're going to go on the court with Trey's. I think it's going to be a good battle.
No, I don't know.
Leandro Barbosa, Jason Terry, Caron Butler, Corliss Williamson, Vin Baker, Epe Udo, and Jay Triano. He's going to play.
Okay, that's a good team, man.
Yeah, there's guys out there.
There are. I'm looking at a list of all these guys that are assistant coaches. There are a hell of a lot of former players, of course. You got anyone?
I mean, I got players, but now that I've been like doing deep dives, I'm not totally sure all these guys are still coaching, even though they're listed as coaches. Like, is Sam Cassell still with the Celtics?
He is.
All right, he's making my team.
Okay. Yeah.
Mo Cheeks is with the Bulls. I think he's the only Hall of Famer who's on a bench, at least according to my research. And the coolest guy to see is definitely God Sham God.
That
guy was known for having the sickest street ball move, and now he's just like a player development coach, and you see him coaching Luka up on how to do the Sham God. That's sick. That's awesome.
Good stuff. The only other fun names like that were former players that I'd like to throw out there, Chris Quinn, the medicine man.
The medicine man, for sure.
I believe Vitaly Potapenko is still an assistant coach, maybe in Memphis. Those are just two fun names. Popeye Jones?
Yep.
Popeye.
He's on the Nuggets.
Pablo Prigioni.
Oh, yeah.
Good one. Is Mike Miller?
Mike Miller is
that's not
agent.
That Mike Miller.
That's the other Mike
James
Miller.
James Posey. Ooh, he's gritty. Yeah, there's so many.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Jesus. You love to see it. Oh man, you just see some old. I'm sorry, I'm just like
I know. I had a list of like great players, like all stars, Hall of Famers, award winners, and then also a list of like these guys are cool, man. Bobby Jackson, Gennaro Pargo.
Yeah, Gennaro Pargo. That's who I believe Shams compared his game to.
That's who he mocks his game to. Yeah,
that's right.
You can tell
right.
He's a Chicago guy. Darius Sungaila.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
high hopes, man.
Good name. Good name. All right. Great questions, guys. Keep them coming. You can email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. You can tweet them in, @nodunksinc. That's INC on the end. And you can leave them in the YouTube comments. Really appreciate it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Before we go, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
I'm just looking at assistant coaches now. Rodney Billups is with the Portland Trailblazers, along with Chauncey. I guess they're...
How'd he get that job?
Yeah, I wonder. No idea. Tweet of the Night. Look, Anthony Edwards, he's growing as the league star, but he's got a dog. Ant Jr., who's going to be super famous as well. Ant Jr. has its own Twitter account. I wonder who runs it. His tweet was, Pops is the face of the league. I'm the face of Minnesota. Hashtag believe that. And there's a bunch of photos of this dog with people in Minnesota saying hi to the dog. And I'm not sure who's holding the dog. But I don't think that's Anthony Edwards.
I don't think
he'd wear that type of clothing. But a bunch of kids just taking photos with a cool looking dog. Love that dog.
Great looking dog.
Yeah,
Pops. I'd take a photo with that dog if I was there.
It's a cool dog.
I feel like this would be a fun for the gram.
What type of dog is that?
Don't ask me.
It looks like some sort of a bulldog, maybe an American bulldog.
Yeah,
it's kind of bigger American than a French pit. One. Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Ant Jr.
Yeah.
Ant Jr. dog.
I think he brought him to, was it a camp, a training camp once or something? There was a story before the season started with Ant Jr. Because he's good. He's got a Twitter account. I think he's going to be more famous than Anthony Edwards. I think he's got a chance. Ant Jr., he's got only 13,000 followers. No, hold on a sec. Hold on.
It's not bad for a dog.
Yeah, it's a dog.
No, it's good. Yeah. Jesus. It's 21K. It's 21K.
Jeez.
Yep.
Does he tweet a lot?
We know who the real dogs are. That's one of his tweets. Okay. March Madness has started. You think me and Pops got it right? What is this, an ad? You're doing ads, ain't you?
We're getting paid.
Retweeted the shoes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Oh, he liked when Cat... Not that cat. Carl Anthony Towns
sure
did something.
I'm sure he liked that cat.
MVP. Who is running this? It's not Anthony Edwards.
It might be that guy that he was.
Yeah.
That was holding him. Turning them all. Dogging them all.
His dog know. Handler, yeah. Yeah. He's got a guy.
English bulldog, according to GQ.
Okay. There you go.
Taking nice a dog to a mall. I don't know, man. Come on.
Oh, that's where they were? They were in a mall there?
No, it looked like a mall.
Yeah, it must have been.
Yeah,
a mall.
I guess. I thought it was. I don't know why I thought it was a concourse, but you're right. I think that was.
Isn't that the biggest mall in the world?
The Mall of Minnesota, yeah.
Mall of America, yeah. Oh, it could be.
He's the face of America, not Minnesota then. She's in that mall. Hashtag believe that. All right. Let's call it there. What a tweet. Seeing a dog. Everybody loves to see a dog, man. 12-game NBA slate tonight, as I said near the top of the show. So lots of games on, you know, it's not the sexiest schedule, but there might be four or five good ones. And one of them features James Harden and his Clips returning to Philadelphia. And Tass Mellis has plans to jump on Playback tonight. That link is in the show notes. Join our Playback room and you can watch the game live with Tass and with all of the No Dunks fans chiming in. It's a lot of fun. We're going to start gearing these up again as we get closer to the playoffs. But that's 7. Are you going live at 7:30? Is that your
whenever
plan?
It starts.
7:30.
I mean, it's
yeah.
just a big sked. So we're just going to be bouncing
around. You're
going to
bounce around? A little court surfing?
I am going to love clicking around.
Okay. Yeah. Tass is the master with the remote. So join him tonight as you bounce around those games. Survivor is also on. So we'll have that show tomorrow afternoon. Lots of stuff to watch tonight. How was Shogun last night? Good.
Oh, it's spicing up.
Did anybody get cut in half by a samurai sword?
There's some big slicing going down.
Is the pirate guy still doing well?
His blades are steely.
Okay.
I've been watching a lot of samurai content recently. Samurais and westerns.
Hey, I love both of those, man.
It's great stuff.
You are getting old.
Oh, man. Literally, I was watching The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I'm like, man, I haven't seen this since I watched it with my dad. What? Wait a second.
I am my dad. All right, we will see you guys.
5 stars, though.
We'll see you tonight on Playback or tomorrow here from the Classic Factory. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, we'll see you on Playback tonight.
Brace the day, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.